Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder. We are about to embark on a show that is going to probably go in more than one direction at a time. Let me start out at least talking about the Meyer case, Edward Albert Meyer. Edward Albert Meyer is a one-armed farmer from Switzerland. He grew up in a place called Bulach, Switzerland, which belongs to something called the Glatt Valley. When he was growing up, it was in the northern part of Switzerland in a very flat area. And as a very young boy, he spent a lot of time watching the sky, and occasionally he would see the bombers from the United States fly over and see planes shot down. And when he spent time with his father, him and his father saw a very unusual craft near the church steeple and near their town. It was a very large flat metal disc, about 200 to 300 meters in diameter, and it sped along silently and hovered over the church steeple. So Billy, from a very young age, had a very unusual life. He started to get telepathic messages from an extraterrestrial man named Svoth. Now, Svoth was about 1,000 years old. He met with Billy for 11 years, and he was his original mentor. And what Billy... One of the important things that Billy learned from Svoth was something called the creation. And Billy has a wonderful writing. He has so many writings. And this one article I've been looking at for a while now, it's called The Source of the Oneness of the Universe. So evidently, we should open ourselves up to this idea that there's a oneness in the universe. The Meyer material talks about a universal consciousness, an intelligence which created our universe, but is not really analogous to what the religions teach about a Heavenly Father. The universal consciousness is evolving. It's neither good nor evil. It's more of a neutral positive spirit. It builds universes as a part of its own evolution. And when it creates human beings, it puts a tiny fragment of itself into the human being. And then the human being goes through a long journey that lasts billions of years of many, many reincarnations into physical bodies. And it's in the physical body that your spirit form can evolve. The spirit form requires the physical body to evolve. It is not creative on its own. It also requires a material consciousness in order to evolve. So we have two kinds of consciousness as human beings. We have a spiritual consciousness, which is eternal, which lasts forever, and we have a material consciousness, which only really exists for your current lifetime. And we have many, many, many lifetimes. We exist in a physical body for about 40 to 60 million years. And that also includes the time in the spiritual realm. See, we live, say we live a 100-year life in the physical, we should spend about 152 years in the spiritual realm. In the spirit realm is where the spirit form learns from what the material consciousness did in its previous lifetime. And the spirit form absorbs everything which is of a neutral, positive value, like your the wisdom, the logic, the discernment, the love, the honesty, all of these characteristics that you learned in the material lifetime, the spirit form will absorb while you're in the spiritual realm. And that's the purpose for being in the spiritual realm, is to gather wisdom from your material life. Now, what happens is the spirit form will create a new material consciousness before you reincarnate. You'll get a new personality, a new conscious mind, a new subconscious mind, a new unconscious mind. And the unconscious mind is extremely important, and we'll hopefully get to talk about that a little bit more this evening. We spend about 40 to 60 million years incarnating into a physical body. There are five evolutionary steps. During that 40 to 60 million years, you have primitive life, rational life, intelligent life, real life, and then life in creational wisdom. In creational wisdom, we can become what's called the king of wisdom, the Ishwish, which is basically the highest level that you can get to in a physical body. There's something called the Srut and the Ban Srut, which is really elite Ishwish. And then we lose the need for a physical body. And then we spend about 56 million years incarnating into a half physical, half spiritual body. And then we completely evolve up to just back to a spirit form. And we go up to these spiritual planes. And we spend about 2.9 billion years in the spiritual plane, which starts at a place called Arahat Athrasada. Now, when Billy was a very, very young boy, Soth taught him how to use spiritual telepathy to receive information from this spiritual plane called Arahat Athrasada. And that's one of the sources of information in regards to the Meyer material. Now, Billy's spirit form, we all have a spirit form. The spirit form is your spiritual consciousness. It resides in your middle brain in an area called the superior colliculus. Billy has a very ancient spirit form that he's had seven other incarnations on the earth as the people that we today call Enoch, Elijah, Isaiah, Jeremiah, Emmanuel, and Muhammad. Today he's known as Beam, Billy Edward Albert Meyer. He was born February of 1937. He's almost 80 years old now. He is a spiritual teacher. He's quite an author. He's written over 40 books. A lot of the information that I'm giving you tonight comes from those books. And he's also written thousands of contact notes, hundreds of bulletins. Now, I talked a little bit about the spirit form. One of the interesting things to remember about the spirit form is it is not able to think creatively. And it's not really conscious the way we in the strictest sense of the word until it merges back with creation. Now, here's something strange. I haven't really kind of completely defined that word, consciousness, to my satisfaction yet in terms of studying the Meyer material, because we have a spiritual consciousness which has thoughts and feelings. And when there's a block, the controlling factor of our spiritual consciousness is called the Gemut. So even though the spirit form isn't completely conscious, it's called the spiritual consciousness, and it has thoughts and feelings. So I'm still learning what the term consciousness means in terms of the Meyer material. Your spirit form never can enter into an animal or a plant. This is a false teaching that comes from some of the religions that are out there. And no, this is extremely controversial, but there is no heaven or hell. There's only the spiritual realm where the spirit form goes to between lifetimes to absorb the information from the previous life. Now, I may have mentioned briefly that the spirit form creates something called the overall consciousness block. And that's where your material consciousness is processed while your spirit form is in the other realm. When the spirit enters the body, the spirit form, it enters 21 days after the sperm fertilizes the egg, and it goes into your middle brain in the area called the superior colliculus, and it sends an energy throughout your whole body. Your spirit form is not affected by anything in the material realm. It's completely invulnerable. It cannot be hurt, cannot be harmed, it cannot have a breakdown. It cannot ever be anything but neutral positive. And neutral positive is what we shoot for in terms of our thinking, because neutral positive thinking is consistent with the thinking of the creation. Now, again, the creation is this universal intelligence that created all the planets, all the stars, created everything on the earth, all of the mountains, the rivers, the oceans, all the trees, all the life, all the people. It all came from this universal consciousness. But one thing that the universal consciousness does is it creates human spirit forms in order to help it with its evolution. See, the creation creates everything in the universe. And while part of it has a pattern, it has a kind of routine, there are steps that it goes through while it's evolving. The creation expands for 155 trillion years, and then it contracts for the same amount of time. It goes into a rest phase after the expansion and the contraction phase. The Meyer material often refers to the creation as the being and non-being of life. One of these phrases which has been repeated over and over again, and something I'm still trying to wrap my mind around. Everything that exists is in an evolutive process. And there is a purpose to our life. Our purpose is the evolving of our consciousness, as well as playing a role in the evolving of the universal consciousness. So one day in the far future, hundreds of years from now, there will be the uniting of humanity on Earth and the creation of a global language. And at that time, we will have established good interpersonal and personal relationships with one another. Now, unfortunately, we're not there yet, but earthly humanity will become united and will be a oneness at one time. And hopefully, our world language would be something like German, which is a very good language in many, many ways. The concept of oneness is also discussed in the Talmud of Emmanuel. Now, what is the Talmud of Emmanuel? The Talmud of Emmanuel is another very controversial writing in the Meyer material, because the Meyer material says that what we have in our New Testament is a kind of a fictionalized story about a man that really lived, but that his true name was Emmanuel. And we'll get into that a little bit this evening and what that all is about. But anyway, the Talmud of Emmanuel is a writing that the Meyer material explains was really the basis for the book of Matthew. And the Talmud of Emmanuel was discovered by a guy named Issa Rashid and another fellow named Billy Meyer, I believe in the 50s, early 60s. And Issa Rashid started to do the translation of this. And he did translate a good portion of the scroll, which was, I believe, written in Aramaic. Now, unfortunately, Issa Rashid was gunned down by the Mossad, which is the secret service of Israel. And he was killed, and unfortunately, the original manuscript was also burned up in a fire that occurred shortly afterwards. So it's very controversial. It is extremely interesting. And over the years, it's become more interesting to me. At first, I had a high level of skepticism, because my point of view has always been that, well, how could we have misunderstood the name of the central figure in Western society? Well, if you do a little bit of research, you will suddenly become shocked and amazed, as I was, because Christianity really wasn't organized until about three centuries after the life of Emmanuel. And it came about when the Roman Emperor Constantine did the First Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. And what he wanted to do was make Rome a kind of Christian empire or Christian nation. So he brought together all of these religious leaders and brought them to Nicaea, and they had this great discussion. And the delegates argued among themselves, because one of the first things they were tasked at doing was to determine the name of this fellow that these ancient scriptures were written about, which sounds absurd to us today because everyone today calls him Jesus. But the shocking thing is there was no letter J in the ancient world. So not only was there not a Jesus, there was no James, there was no John, there was no book of Job. They all were called by different names. There was a book of Iob. So many of these other names began with a Y or an I. And then in about 1550, a guy named Gian Giorgio Tarissino invented the letter J, and he was one of these people that started the process of where they would go back to these older writings and substitute the letter I for the letter J. So this is, excuse me, the story about how this happened. Excuse me. So anyway, back to the First Council of Nicaea. So Constantine had to intervene because the people that he brought together could never come to an agreement on the name of the person that today is called Jesus Christ. So Constantine came up with the name Jesus Krishna. Jesus, for the people that in the European areas who had worshipped the Druid gods and Krishna for the Eastern Savior God. So they brought the two names together and they got Jesus Krishna. Now, this is one perspective, and I think there are different perspectives on exactly how this whole thing went down in the Council of Nicaea in 325 AD. Now, the Greek spelling for the word that we translate today and use as Jesus began with the letter I. However, it was pronounced something like Jesus, and the Latin would be spelled I-E-S-U-S. And there was an interesting article on Jesus, and the word Jesus is a bit of a hybrid. It has no distinctive etymological root meaning. In fact, again, the letter J did not exist in the ancient world until 1550 or so. Now, in the 1611 version of the King James, the name IESVS appears. And it says the New Testament of our Lord and Savior, IESVS Christ. And as I said earlier, there was no Jesus in the English until about 1550. Because when Gian Giorgio Turrisino invented the letter J, it spread from there. And first he invented this letter for German, then it spread to French, and then to English. And then somewhere along the line, they started to substitute the J for the letter I that appeared in the Latin or the Greek. And they did it with Job and Jesus and James and John. A very strange history we have here that's very, very seldom talked about. The Old English had no letter J. It had A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, K, L, M, N, O, P. No letter J. So there was no W, there was no J or U in the Old English. And I encourage you to go out to YouTube, look this up. You can find a very interesting YouTube that explains this. It's called the letter J. And just look up the letter J and you'll see it. Even the names of James and John were changed. As I've said before, James's real name was Y-A-A-Q-O-V. John's real name is almost unpronounceable for us. So in any case, the Meyer material says the name wasn't Yeshua, as some in the Hebrew, the closest name is Yeshua. The Meyer material says he was originally called Emmanuel. And Emmanuel means the one with godly knowledge. So, however you feel about this, it certainly has been an eye-opener to me a bit. The Meyer material in the Talmud of Emmanuel says there was one of these extraterrestrial humans on the earth during the time of Emmanuel. And he was a king of wisdom, and he lived somewhere in the northern hemisphere. Emmanuel was said to be the son of a guardian messenger, an extraterrestrial man named Gabriel. And Emmanuel was born in Bethlehem. It's a true, just the way it says in the Bible. But it was not a star which led the wise men to the birth. The light with the long tail had hovered directly over the stable where the boy was found. The light with the long tail also made a singing sound. And this was a ship. This was a beam ship, a spacecraft, and Mary and Joseph followed the spacecraft that made the singing sound and had the long tail of light. They followed that all the way to Egypt. So the difference in the teaching, just in a nutshell, And then I'll shift gears a little bit here. The difference in the teaching is this. That Manuel said he wanted to reveal the power, the great power of the human spirit. He wanted to tell and teach every man and woman the tremendous power that exists in the human spirit, which is quite interesting. Because in this article, which I've been going back to very much lately, which is called The Oneness of the Universe, one thing it teaches us and tells us to do is to embrace the power within yourself and to use it for yourself. And evidently we have a great power within us. And if you remember the book, The Might of Thoughts, you'll remember this power. It's a tremendous power. All of the circumstances of our own life come from our thinking. So if you have good thinking, you will produce good feelings. If you have good feelings, it will produce good habits. And if you have good habits, they will manifest as good circumstances in your life. So your thinking leads to the circumstances of your life. We have much more power than we realize in terms of our thinking. The problem comes where we also have unconscious thoughts, which are incredible in their power. Our unconscious thoughts we're not aware of all the time. Our consciousness is much like a garden or a tree. There's a part of the consciousness which is kind of hidden and not seen, just like the roots of the tree. There's part of the consciousness which is noticeable, and that is the crown of the tree. So the key is always to maintain a balance between the roots and the part that is seen. Now, one of the ways to maintain this balance is the evolution of our consciousness, which comes through independent thinking. And this is where we get to the one of our titles tonight, The Goals of the New World Order. Now, this is where I stray just a little bit from the Meyer material. Although Billy acknowledges what he calls the secret dark order in the Goblet of Truth. The most important thing that you can do is related to your thoughts. And you have to have independent thought. The goal of the elite is to take away your independent thinking. They want to create a world government. And this world government will be a system in which people that have knowledge about technology will control many, many things. They want to create a corporate-controlled technocracy, a group of technical experts that will transform our society. They want to take away the rights of the public. They want to remove the right of free speech. They want to remove the right to bear arms. And they want to remove the right of free travel. They want to merge us with machines. Now, Billy talks about the rise of the robot people in Contact 259, where people, there'll be genetic engineering, which results in people being born without arms and legs, with their nerve endings exposed, so they can be attached to machines. The elite wants to dumb down the public, take away our freedoms, merge us with machines, move us into what's called mega cities. They want to restrict travel. They want us to lose the right to own and drive our own vehicle. And that's where these driverless cars come in. And there will be these very large freeways that connect these mega cities. We won't be allowed to go into the suburban areas anymore. We won't be allowed to go into the nature areas because this is the horrible goal of the New World Order is to do this. And they want to control each and every person through the means of mind control. And that's why this election is so important. And this is just my opinion. I think that the Clintons work directly for the New World Order. And I think if she gets elected, Hillary, she will do everything she can to bring in this New World Order. I think Trump is the only president, the only guy running for president that we've had in the last 55 years, 60 years, that opposes the New World Order. Anyway, we are already in what the Meyer material calls a consciousness conditioned tyranny. And this tyranny is related to our consciousness. And Spoth told Billy about this, and he told Billy that our leaders would become megalomaniacal and they would take away our rights of self-determination. Asket talked about thinking independently, and in Asket's Explanations Part 5, she said that for this reason the truth must be rewritten prophetically for him, meaning the earth human, as in equations, in order to make him think independently, whereby he slowly finds and recognizes the truth himself. And that's why there are all of these prophecies in the Meyer material, to kind of jumpstart our thinking. And we have to learn to think independently. Now, Asket was Billy's second mentor. She's a woman from the Tao universe. The Tao universe is a sister universe to ours. It's 46 trillion years old, just as our universe is 46 trillion years old. She asked it sent a ship to pick Billy up on top of a hill in Switzerland right around 1953. The ship became invisible. Billy became invisible. He was shot off to the Middle East. The ship landed in Jordan. And Billy met Asket at this point. Her tremendous ship landed. It was something like 300 meters in diameter. She didn't step out till about a half an hour later, and Billy finally got to meet his second mentor, and they were not that far from the Great Pyramid. They both got in her ship, and they flew to an even closer position near the Great Pyramid because Asket was going to take Billy into the Great Pyramid. Well, I wanted to just stop and talk a little bit about the Great Pyramids. In about 1956, Billy talked to Asket and he started to have meetings with her. One of the things she stated was that the pyramids were built two times, about 36,650 years ago from 1956, and another second time about 73,300 years ago. So they were built at two different times. Ptah had a long discussion, or somewhat long discussion, with Billy about the pyramids. He said that when you calculate back from today, the pyramids were indeed erected about 73,340 years ago. And this not only talks about the pyramids in Egypt, but about the pyramids located around the earth. The distance from the sun was about 152.5 million kilometers. And this was during the construction of the pyramid, during that era. Now, the pyramids were covered on the outside with limestone and lime mortar. And these pyramids were higher than they are today. In those days, the Great Pyramid was about 500 feet in height. And it represented 1 meter of height per 1 million kilometers of the Earth to Sun distance at that time. So the Great Pyramid was a kind of, it was a symbolic thing. In other words, they made that, the height of the Great Pyramid, a ratio to the distance of the Earth to the Sun. So 1 meter of height on the Great Pyramid corresponded to 1 million kilometers of distance. So over the course of the millennia of the Great Pyramid, the limestone layers were removed and parts of the actual pyramids themselves were lost due to erosions, and all other things were taken off of the Great Pyramids. The pyramid structures had many interconnected subterranean rooms that were constructed under the direction of extraterrestrials who had come to the Earth in ancient times from the Orion constellation. Now, these underground catacombs were the lair of a negative group of extraterrestrials that were on the Earth at that time, called the Giza Intelligences. And the Giza Intelligences worked to control mankind through the use of mind control, a mind control that came through these telenautic impulses. They also used religion to control the minds of Earth humans. Again, I was talking about Emmanuel earlier and the Talmud of Emmanuel. According to the Meyer material, the original tomb of Emmanuel was destroyed intentionally. I believe Quetzal was involved in that. That's constructed. That's mentioned in Contact Report 213. The hillside where the tomb of Emmanuel was destroyed. And the reason this was done so another Christian cult would not arise from that. Now, I mentioned this briefly before. We're already in it, I guess, what you would call the Age of Aquarius. It's a golden age. It's not the religious final days, as people have said. It's not a final time. It's when real life starts. And this is the epoch in which everything starts to reach its full potential. And one of the culminations of this period is in 2028. So we're heading right into it. So I mentioned the evolutionary steps of mankind before. You call primitive thought, rational thought, and the third stage is intelligence. The fourth stage is sometimes called real life or the utilization of spirit power. The fifth stage is life and creational wisdom. The sixth stage is this half spiritual, half physical stage, and then finally we spend 2.9 billion years in the spiritual planes, and eventually we merge back with creation. Now, there's a lot of really strange things that are going to happen during this long evolutionary process that we're on. Now, one of the things that happens is the disembodiment of the spirit from organic bodies. That is mentioned in Contact Report 3. Let me read this quickly. The human being may become hundreds or even thousands of years old when he has reached a certain spiritual and consciousness-related state of relative perfection. and a correspondingly high in sound wave living. But after the state of about 40 to 60 million years, as I said earlier, the spirit no longer requires a material body. It becomes a half-spiritual body. So now we're in that half-spiritual stage. I forget exactly how long, 30 to 40 million years. And then we move into the purely spiritual stage where we last 2.9 billion years in these seven stages of the spiritual planes, starting with the Patali level, something called the Lagan level, the Yukari level, the Dharman level, the Apsali level, the Lantano level, and the Arhat Athrasada level. That's the final stage of the spirit form as it goes through all these different stages. So our spirits rest in the band of energy that's around the planet in between lifetimes. You can call that the spirit realm. And it typically, if you've lived a long life and have added a great deal of wisdom to your spirit, normally you would come back relatively slowly. On the other hand, if you lived a short life, you tend to come back quickly. However, in the time of overpopulation, spirit forms across the board tend to come back too quickly, and that causes problems. It causes problems with the formation of the personality and the formation of independence, the formation of the male mentality. It causes different problems like that. So, in any case, I wanted to cover some of these concepts that we do talk about from time to time, and I think it's important to always focus on the important things like self-responsibility, like the source of oneness of the universe, and the creational natural laws. One of the most important creational natural laws is the law of love. Now, the Meyer material talks about love in the sense of a wisdom-conditioned love, not a romantic love. And it says that love is the highest principle in all creation. In fact, the incredible splendor of nature is the visible expression of the love of creation. And creation, although it's called a Wesenheiten in the German, it actually radiates love. It radiates love through its creations, through the incredible splendor of its creations. Now, the creation, the universal consciousness, is not a person. It's not a personification. It's not a father. It doesn't even enact commandments. It creates these creational natural laws, these laws of nature. One of these laws of nature is the law of love, which is the highest principle in all creation. Everything follows that principle in absolute logic. There's also the law of causality, the law of cause and effect. There are also the law related to reincarnation, which we've been talking about tonight. There's a law related to the seven-step construction of matter. You know, one of the things that Emmanuel said is the body and the spirit are one, and that the body comes from the spirit. Amazingly, they're a different matter, a different form, but the body and the spirit are one. So there is a seven-stage construction in matter, which I'm going to have to do more study on to talk about that in detail. There's also a law of creation that relates to the effects of your thinking. So our thinking is designed to be neutral positive so that we are on the same, our thoughts then should be like the universal consciousness's thoughts. which are always neutral positive. If you get out of balance, out of the neutral positive balance, that's when we run into problems in life. One of the ways to maintain balance in your thinking is to follow your thoughts, to clarify your thoughts. And clarify means to make something less confused, to make it more clearly comprehensible, to take away the uncertainty, to take away the ambiguity. So you should examine your thoughts and try to clarify those thoughts. Now, this will take effort, it will take practice, it will take patience. But if you do this, it will lead to a harmonious life. So remember, your consciousness is very much like a garden. Now, one of the biggest problems that people run into with their thinking is negative repeating thoughts. So when you have a negative, when you have a repeating thought, ask yourself, is this thought neutral? Is this a neutral, positive thought? You'll find that you may have strong feelings associated with this thought. Are these strong feelings making you uncomfortable? If the answer is yes, you may be having negative repeating thoughts. If you maintain negative repeating thoughts, you can become psychically disturbed. And this is very, very bad. And your thoughts will become limited, and you'll be forced back into these negative thoughts over and over again. And you can go into a rotation, and these rotations of thoughts become a trap, a horrible prison, and you cannot free yourself from these thoughts. So we need to look at our thoughts and practice self-cognition, which is the process of knowing yourself. Because that which the human being thinks, he makes real. So you want to have tended and nurtured your good and positive thoughts. And one good positive thought is a positive view of yourself. Nurture these neutral positive thoughts. Don't allow your feelings to pull you into a negative view of yourself. If you have some failure or something that you wanted to accomplish, or in some way of your life that something didn't turn out the way you wanted it to, do not dwell on that, because the law of causality will kick in and your negative thinking will bring about negative circumstances in your life, and you can get the negative boomerang. So these laws of nature are something that we've got to get our good handle on. Another law of nature is striving. And we should constantly be striving. This is one of the keys to happiness, one of the keys to keeping yourself out of the negative repeating thoughts is also striving. Because striving has a way of keeping you neutral positive. Without striving, we tend to fall into all kinds of bad habits. Now, Billy has a great book. It's called The Way to Live, The Art zu Leben, which talks about the law of striving very much. Striving is something that comes to every human being. And the more you strive, the more you have patience and wisdom, the more striving will help you. Let me read this little section that it's a little bit related to striving. And one of the things involved in striving is fulfilling your duty to yourself. If a human being does not continually pay attention to himself or herself, and he does not fulfill his duty to himself or herself, then you can decline and you can end in misery, where suicidal thoughts can even come into being. So it says here, the psyche can only be harmed through feelings and thoughts of an real nature. Now think about that. It's only the unreal thoughts of an unreal nature that can harm you. So through imaginations, which are brought forth, we can create anxiety, suffering, worry, and grief. Now, one of the things that we have to keep in mind is pretty much everything is transitory to a degree. So we have to kind of keep that in mind. So let me read this again from the book here. It says, therefore, never do hidden things about which you would have to feel ashamed about before yourself or the eyes of a stranger. So you have to really be self-responsible here. We have what's called an inner eye. And that inner eye requires us to have the fulfillment of our duty to ourselves. That is the inner you. Never allow yourself to appear ragged in your clothing. It's, again, fulfilling your duty to yourself. This duty to ourselves is very, very important. If you want to live in fulfillment of your duty to yourself and in fulfillment of your own duty, then never allow yourself to be controlled by any desires. Well, that's a little bit easier said than done. But I think that's some great wisdom there. I'll let you apply that to your own life in about 1,000 different ways, at least I can. Also, you must never allow yourself to be controlled by the desire which often motivates you to play a shining lead role. So never, if you want to live in fulfillment of duty to self, never let yourself be controlled by any desires. It could be the desire for food, sex, anything. So, anyway, we have a lot of great advice in this book. One of the great things we have to watch out for is boredom. Boredom, the Meyer material says, is the death of all initiative. And whoever falls prey to boredom falls prey also generally to addictions and vices. So we must never become idle unless you're relaxing. There's a time when we need to relax. Don't become preoccupied with yourself. Now, it says here, very few human beings are able to understand how boredom, poverty of thought, that's what boredom is, poverty of thought, as well as self-centeredness, lead to deterioration, to a monotonous and uninteresting inner nature. So it all comes down to, again, our thinking. And Billy says here, you must be a self-companion. You must be a friend to yourself. It's very, very interesting. It says here, one's own missteps, whether serious or not serious, are often thought of by the human being only as trivial peccadilloes, which are excusable at all times. However, for the same misstep with others, the fallible ones are severely or harshly blamed. So don't be judging others too harshly. So one of these great creational natural laws is the law of striving. And in order to be happy, the human being has to focus very much on striving. Striving involves improving yourself. It involves study, it involves work, it involves being a friend to yourself. You have to be a friend to yourself. You have to be your own best friend, your own self-companion. You have to take care of yourself. So, and this is all part of the law of striving. It's a creational natural law. if you have a negative circumstance in your life, then apply yourself to striving, because striving has a way of putting your thoughts into a neutral positive state. And your thinking is the key to all the circumstances in your life, all the happiness, all of the everything positive comes from your own thoughts. Let me read this here. A human being who, with his or her thinking and actions, always has only his own advantage and profit in mind, will never choose an honest form of life, but instead earns much vexation, resentment, ununderstanding, and hate. And I'm sad to say that this kind of describes our leaders very much, who have chose a form of life which is unhealthy. So for us to come around on the earth, the change is going to have to come from the bottom up. It's not going to come from the leaders. It's going to come from the bottom up. And through people like you and me, through our striving, this whole situation will be corrected. So in any case, the plan is to be back tomorrow night. We'll be talking with Mary Joyce about skyships over Cashiers, North Carolina. Should be an interesting show. I hope you enjoyed tonight's show. I intended to be a little more political, but it just sometimes doesn't work out exactly the way I plan. Have a great week. Keep striving. Keep your thoughts neutral, positive. Embrace the power within yourself. And we'll catch you next show. Good night.